The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, we got a lot to talk about today. Falcons have already fired somebody.
What?
Hawks. Maybe they'll go on a little run. We're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Abe's in for Mike. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey man. Abe, it's good to have you here. My man Day-Day's here with us as well. G-Money, Gordon, our on-site engineer, and we're here until 6. Inviting you to come out and join us, guys. Look, we have had an interesting offseason. To say the least, for the Falcons. And most of this is surrounded by what happened with James Pierce Jr., let's be honest. But the hiring of Matt Ryan, the hiring of Ian Cunningham, the hiring of Kevin Stefanski, I've said I feel good about all of this, and I think it's moving in the right direction. But we got to bring in our Falcons reporter, Joe Patrick, as we start the show today, because there is a story that's out there. We want to address it, and we certainly want to move on because the Falcons have already dismissed him from his duties, and he is not going to be a part of this staff. But Joe joins us right now here on the show, and we're going to get the latest from him because he's been all over this story. But Abe, this basically stems from an assistant that they hired at Michigan who was doing some shady things behind the scenes, and apparently this stuff is now being reported as to getting out. And when I say shady, you know, again, your personal life is your personal life until it affects your job. And when it does, and people are affected by that, then it becomes an issue. So LaTroy Lewis, who was hired as a defensive line assistant coach, he was at Michigan. He was there under Harbaugh, was there under Sherrone Moore, who obviously recently got fired. And so now the things that he was involved in from various reports, and Joe, again, has been all over this, the Falcons had to address this, and they did today. The Falcons staff is up at the Combine. They have released him from his duties. So we just want to let you guys know what's the deal and the backstory behind this. And Joe joins us right now here on the show. So, Joe, first things first, Falcons have fired him. They have released him from his duties. We need to mention that because some people will see this and go, wow, he's still on the staff. No, he's not. But first and foremost, tell us the backstory behind what we know about this incident with LaTroy Lewis that led the Falcons to releasing him.
Yeah, so this is kind of a crazy story, and it really is more of a Michigan / Sherrone Moore story, in my opinion. That's kind of where all of this stems from the reporter Justin Spiro, who was really, he's an independent reporter, and he was really kind of on the Sherrone Moore case very early on, really before a lot of the prestige media, you know, kind of took hold of that story or got a grasp of that story. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, according to the allegations that were in this most recent article of his, in which he seemed to be in contact with the Jane Doe in this instance, that Jane Doe was a victim of many things, you know, sexual threats, death threats that were sent via text at one point or another from both Sherrone Moore and LaTroy Lewis, again, who is in this story and who the Falcons just hired 17 days ago, I believe, on February 10th. And, you know, as soon as they learned about this, you know, I would say you give them a lot of credit for moving quickly and taking a decisive action in this respect. It's been interesting for Lewis, the coach in question here, who was with the Falcons in particular, because he was with the University of Michigan through the 2024 season. That's when he came aboard there. And then left after that 2024 season, early in 2025, went to Toledo, spent the year there, and then signed with UConn for about 2 weeks earlier this January before the Falcons then signed him. And of course, he only stayed with the Falcons for a couple of weeks. So a really unsavory one, guys. And it sounds like to me like a lot of the things in which, you know, Sherrone Moore was engaged in as it relates to those activities that he's alleged to have been involved in Michigan. It sounds like LaTroy Lewis was kind of a party to that, at least in some respects, according to, again, the allegations made by the Jane Doe in the situation.
Joe, I've never been part of a hiring committee. No one to really trust me with executive decision power making here. But at what point does part of this fall on the Falcons in terms of due diligence, looking into why the short tenure at UConn, and obviously knowing he was part of what happened at Michigan there. I get you can't do a complete, full, detailed background check on every single staff member you hired, but this feels like it should have been discovered before the announcement of his hiring.
Maybe. I don't know. And I don't know who, you know, like what to the extent of background checks that are done on coaches when they come into these situations. Again, that's one I really don't know. I know for a lot of Falcons fans, they'll probably look at this incident and just kind of lump them in with a lot of other things that have happened over, you know, the last, you know, X amount of years and just like the, I guess, traps that the team has fallen into in one respect or another and kind of lump this in with the others. But it's interesting that this happens under, you know, a new leadership, a new organization. But I don't know exactly, you know, it's new leadership with regards to some of the executives, but there's also some of the same coaches that were retained and stuff. So I don't really know, and I don't want to speak out of school as to, like, who ultimately had the authority to make this call, whether they looked into this enough. But, you know, clearly, I think the one thing that you can respect the Falcons for doing is once this was brought to their attention, which I think clearly what the actions that they took today showed that it was not, that they did make that decisive move and let him go from the staff.
Yeah, I agree, Joe. It's Dukes and Bill, guys. Abe's in for Mike today. We're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead talking about a story to start the show because, again, when you see Falcons and you're going, okay, what's going on? Assistant coach relieved of his duties, and then you go, okay, what's the deal? We're trying to fill you in on this. So the statement from the Falcons is that they've dismissed assistant defensive line coach LaTroy Lewis from his role. And, Joe, I agree with you. This is certainly – this was nothing done on his tenure while a Falcon assistant. This was before he got hired, which has now brought the Falcons some smoke that they didn't deserve, you know, that they didn't want. And it adds to what has already been an intriguing offseason, which is why I think a lot of people are going to look at this and go, man, what's happening with the Falcons? Honestly, I don't put this on them. Sometimes you hire guys within the best intentions and you find out stuff and you go, oh, well, we didn't know. And I don't know if anybody knew before this story dropped. As we move forward, and I think all the attention is at the combine, and I want to ask you about that as well. We're talking with Joe Patrick, guys, here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game before we get done with you. But as we move forward, I just feel like with this particular offseason, and specifically James Pierce Jr., again, they didn't have any control over that, and they're trying to, you know, monitor that situation. Do you think that there'll be a little tighter you know, situation with our front office and how things are handled? Or do you think, like, this is just business as normal? Because I don't know if we know how Ian Cunningham handles situations, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, I have to think that, like, when this kind of thing happens, you do kind of, like, have a talk with everybody and just kind of, like, say this kind of thing. Well, I'm sure, you know, I don't put any blame on the Falcons necessarily for having hired this guy and then, again, taking that very quick action to let him go. You know, you obviously don't want to be in this situation ever to begin with, because you just kind of, you look like you're kind of party to some unsavory things, even though you did not have anything to do with them as an organization. So yeah, I think that this is potentially, you know, hopefully a learning experience for the organization and whatever coaches or whoever it was who was kind of, you know, responsible for doing the due diligence on some of these coaches to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. Because I think that I think the Falcons find themselves very frustrated that these things keep on cropping up.
Even with the optics of it, were you surprised how quickly they took action in making the announcement of a dismissal?
I kind of was, but I also feel like there was one part of the story, guys, that was a little bit that probably would have made the Falcons have the hair stand up kind of on the back of their neck, where there's a portion of the story where it says Lewis, when he was reached for comment on this story to address the allegations, he then contacted the Jane Doe from the JW Marriott in Indianapolis, where he is right now with the Falcons. Oh. And so I think that part of that was that he's with them, basically, and that being one of the reasons why they probably felt like they needed to move very quickly on this situation.
Wow. Okay, so he's at the combine and tried to contact this young lady or this woman. We don't know if she's a young lady, but this woman who apparently is involved with the story. We're calling her Jane Doe from the combine?
That's what's in the article, guys. In fact, I'll just read straight from here. It says, quote, when reached for comment on the story, he, being Lewis, declined, then called Jane from his hotel room at the JW Marriott in Indianapolis, where he is attending the NFL Combine with other Falcons staff. When he identified himself to Jane, she instructed him not to call again and hung up. So that was the extent of, but like, you know, I think that, yeah, when something like that happens and that person is there with you as the organization, sure, you feel like you can move pretty quickly and get to the bottom of whatever investigating they had to do today.
All right, Joe, before we let you go, and appreciate the time today, it's just a weird story. And again, the Falcons involved, but they have moved on from him within, I think, 3 hours of this story dropping. And that is new information that he tried to apparently contact this lady from the combine, which makes it even worse. I mean, that, to me, that screams, you know, he's trying to shut some people down as this story is growing, and I'm glad that the Falcons did what they needed to do. Let me ask you about the combine and what your thoughts are as far as positions. It's something that Abe and I were talking about. We're going to get back into it today on here on the show, and that is, what position do you think is the most important position of need as we head towards the draft, and what do you think they're looking at?
Well, I think the most important position is probably at wide receiver, just because you look at the receiving options basically that you have right now, and it's basically down to two guys. It's Drake London and Kyle Pitts, who's not even a receiver. Now, Darnell Mooney is still on the roster as it stands now, but you know, I'm kind of skeptical about how long that might remain the case. Their Falcons could potentially save quite a bit of money if they were to release him. They could always, you know, just like maybe renegotiate a contract or something also to open up some space for them, but I highly doubt that that would happen. So you need some playmakers on that side of the ball, especially when you have so many question marks around the quarterback and who that's going to be. You know, and I think we can probably expect that it will be multiple quarterbacks, probably by necessity. You know, I'm just not under the impression that Michael Penix is going to 100% be ready to go for week one. So, you know, I think that you want to help that quarterback by putting some talent around them. And I think specifically at quarterback, you're looking for a player with traits that really kind of complement what Drake London does really well. So for me, and I know that you've talked about this as well, Carl, it's about, you need a type of player. It's not necessarily going out and using your second round pick. Like, your second round pick has to be a wide receiver because that's what you really need. But it's about finding the right type of player, that guy who can really stretch the field and open up some of those gaps, especially in zone coverage, for Drake London to have some of those areas between the numbers in which he can work and be really effective, which we've seen. So I think that's the biggest need, but there's obviously some other ones, you know, with what you mentioned about James Pierce Jr. at edge. You have to wonder if the Falcons are going to, you know, have another look at that position. You've got off-ball linebacker questions as it relates to whether you're going to bring Caden Ellis back. If you're not, then that means you're looking for a starter there, either in free agency or the draft. And potentially center as well. I think center is an area where you maybe can find a bit of a diamond in the rough later in the draft. One guy I like is Pat Coogan, who is the center for Indiana, who won the national championship this year. But you know, I think all these areas on the team are where you want to really add depth and just try to improve this roster as best you can. But I don't think it's a roster that's really like all that far away, especially in this NFC South, but you obviously need to nail these draft picks, and it's going to be a really big test for Ian Cunningham.
It is. Great stuff, Joe. Good stuff on the Falcons, and just wanted to get the latest so Falcon fans are in the know as we start a Friday, and they're still up there evaluating players. We don't need any other distractions. So they have moved on from the assistant coach, and the focus remains on getting ready for the draft. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it, man. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, look, and I know many of you are like, what? What? Who knows? who knows? At the end of the day, Abe and I are looking at each other right now, and we're going, all right, man, let's just keep it moving. That's all we can say. And here's a guy that, again, brought some smoke that you didn't want and didn't need. And you need to move on, and they've done that. All right, we're coming back. We got plenty more to talk about. We will focus in on what's been going on at the Combine because our boy Bryant McFadden has been killing it all week. CBS NFL analyst, two-time Super Bowl champion, B-Mac joins us next.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Dukes and Bell. We're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead, guys. Talking about all the things that are going on, including the NFL Combine. We're going to head there and talk to our buddy B-Mac, who's been up there all week. But Abe is filling in for Mike today, and we were just having this conversation. The NFL salary cap, the numbers came in today, which also means now we know what the tag numbers are going to be. So we've tagged Kyle Pitts. Abe, what's the official number now, the tag number and the salary that he'll be guaranteed?
Yeah, maybe a little lower than a lot of people potentially thought. He's coming in at $15,045,000. So 15.045, not 450.
Okay.
So it's just over $15 million at $15,045,000.
All right, Mike and I have projected. I actually thought it was going to go up because the cap went up, I think, $22 million or something of that nature. NFL, guys, it's a money grab. And I say that. There's no other sport that has seen this kind of growth from a revenue standpoint. When you go back to the 90s and the salary cap was like $34 million for your entire team, and now we're talking upwards of $300-plus, $330 million. But, so Kyle Pitts is going to make $15 million, basically, as a guy that's been tagged by the Falcons. I thought the number, Mike and I discussed, 16 to 18. This is good news. It's actually less than what we assumed. Let's talk to B-Mac. Bryant McFadden, CBS NFL analyst. B, I've seen you all week, all over the place up there, man, having fun in Indianapolis covering the Combine. Tell us what your thoughts are, man, as you talk to GMs and the vibe of what you got out of the folks that you've spoken to. I know you spoke with Omar Khan, the general manager of the Steelers. I saw you with other various general managers. What's the vibe right now with the Combine and what people are expecting?
Well, with the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, with my discussion with Omar Khan, it seems very optimistic that he believes Aaron Rodgers will return for 2026. Now, a lot can happen between now and whenever that decision comes about, but he feels very, very good about his chances. But if that's not the case, he also feels good about Will Howard, you know, potentially being QB1 for 2026. I know a lot of fans are like, what? You haven't seen him play since his Ohio State days, but I guess, you know, Mike McCarthy really liked what he saw throughout the practice reps that he saw with Will Howard in becoming the head coach. And if you're Mike McCarthy, two things led to you becoming the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Either knowing that you potentially could work with Aaron Rodgers or knowing that you will be okay in working with Will Howard if Aaron Rodgers is not a part of the team in 2026.
B-Mac, when we watch the Combine, because, you know, it's starting to gear up, and we watch it as fans too, and I know they've opened the buildings, what are the drills that actually matter? What are the ones that we should actually pay attention to, and how different is it position by position?
I think for every position, it's the same answer, the position drills. It's the same answer. And the reason why I say it is because those are the drills that you would be doing day in and day out. Those are the drills that you would be doing play in and play out. I understand for certain positions, for the skill guys, the 40 is very, very important. But how many times do you see these guys just running a straight line 40 yards? There's some type of movement involved for wide receivers or defensive backs. So you rarely see guys just take off in a straight line 40-yard sprint. But it is important. But just how your fluid movement is in your day-to-day drills, whatever your positions is, I think that's the most important thing for me.
When we talk about, you know, this quarterback class, we asked you last week about your thoughts on Fernando Mendoza. I agree with you because it is a weak class. But, you know, he's not throwing at the combine. I don't think it's going to hurt him. But tell me about the next guy, because Ty Simpson today kind of pounding his chest saying, hey, I'm the best quarterback in this draft. Where do you see him? Because is he the second quarterback taken off the board?
Man, listen, man, what did I say last week, Carl, in the – a one-eyed man is considered king in the land of the blind.
That's right. Yes.
You don't have to be great. You just got to be better than everything else that's surrounding you. And that's a strong case for Ty Simpson, honestly, because it's such a watered-down quarterback class. It seems like he is the favorite to be the second quarterback to be drafted behind Fernando Mendoza. And he has an opportunity to have that stamp of approval with that potential positioning, you know, if he excels and take care of his business here in Indy right now. Now, when you watch Ty Simpson play, you saw some really, really good things and then some questionable things. He also is a one-year starter. I mean, I think he's only played in 15 games. I think 15 starts or something like that. I'm always a bit concerned when you see guys get drafted high going into the National Football League with limited starts because they haven't really been thrown in the fire, a la Anthony Richardson. He had 13 starts in Gainesville. Now, I'm not comparing Anthony Richardson to Ty Simpson. I'm just talking about the small sample size, right? So, yeah, he has a right to bump his chest. I think he's in a good position to be the second quarterback to come off the board. A lot can happen between now and draft night, but he's in a very, very good seat when you talk about who is next at the quarterback position behind Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, I always think of Mitchell Trubisky as the one-year starter that went
high. Another guy. Another guy, yeah.
You mentioned it. Fernando Mendoza is going to wait until the pro day while Ty Simpson's planning to throw at the combine. Where do you fall, BMAC, on the differences between performing at the combine versus at your pro day and some of these decisions to hold out and not perform at that neutral field?
And I think right now that's what we're seeing. I'm growing accustomed to seeing some of these high-level guys that are in a good position to be the first player to come off the board and in a position wait and do things at their pro day. And for Fernando Mendoza, he's earned that right. Right? He's earned the right. I mean, we just talked about who else behind Fernando could be the first to come off the board at quarterback spot. He's earned that right. Do so in a comfortable environment, thrown to guys that he's thrown to the entire 2025 season. And just go ahead and just put in a stamp of approval on what we all think of him. So, you know, when you earn that right, you know, you have the option to either do it or perform at Indy. He's waiting to do it at Indiana. And I don't see anything wrong with him doing that. I don't think because he's doing that, he could lose leverage. We've seen some of the top quarterbacks do this. Caleb Williams, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I think Jaden Daniels didn't throw at Indy.
Right.
A lot of guys are declining and doing this. So I'm okay with it. I don't have an issue with it.
You were a DB in the NFL. Tell me about this DB class, man. I mean, every year we talk about it, and you have a couple of guys that you're keeping your eye on. Anybody at the combine that's got a little buzz?
Man, you know the DB's coming with flair and swag. Flair and swag. I actually had a one-on-one with Avion Terrell.
Okay.
AJ Terrell's his little brother. He's super competitive. And it's not a competitive mentality where he's a bit arrogant. He just believes in his ability, man. And I talked about years ago, man, want to have a feel-old moment. I told him, man, I said it felt like yesterday when I watched AJ get drafted during that COVID draft, and you were one of the first ones to give him a hug. And he was like, man, he remembered it like it was yesterday. You guys remember it. You know, of course, Atlanta taking A.J. Terrell. He said he would love to play with his brother, but he know Atlanta doesn't have a first-round selection. So the likelihood of that happening probably won't happen because he's a first-round type of talent. He was a really good conversation with him, and I really enjoyed talking with him. He said, you know, he's planning on running faster than A.J. Terrell. He said he's a better basketball player than A.J. Terrell. And overall, man, he thinks he's going to be a better corner than his brother. And I love it. I love it. I spoke with Caleb Downs, another great, great individual, man. Caleb Downs, potentially, guys, I'm hearing some conversation here from Indy. His name has been associated with the Jets, Arizona, Tennessee, and the Giants. And if you guys know the draft and the order of the draft, those teams are in the top five with the Jets being two.
Right, right.
So they really, really value Caleb Downs, and he measured in at 6 foot. Some people were concerned about would he be 5'10-ish, 5'11-ish. Well, he's a 6 foot safety. So he checked that box off, and he's off to a good start here in Indy.
Yeah, and it was Caleb Downs' teammate, Sonny Styles, who stole the headlines on day one. How do you separate those workout warriors, even when the tape itself is good? He was a good player at Ohio State. But how do you separate what you see at the combine, what you see at tape, and then what you think translates at the next level?
Well, that's the thing. Like, with Sonny played really, really good football. Remember, before he did one thing in Indy, before he got measured, before he did one drill, he was considered a top 10 type prospect, right? So what he did was he just confirmed and he just added more pizzazz to that height in his performance. But then also for Sonny, because he's such a versatile prospect, remember, he came to Ohio State as a safety. Play safety, they moved him to an off-ball linebacker, and the rest is history. So if you look at, and also too, he's heavier and taller than Arvell Reese, the edge rusher. He's an inch taller and he's a few pounds heavier, and he's faster and he's more explosive. So now it's like, what can we do with him, and how can we do it? How can we do it at a high level? And I had this conversation today, based on what he did yesterday, and Arvell Reese, what he did yesterday, last night. I think there's a legit chance he could go to the Jets. And I think before Thursday performances, many felt like the Jets would probably be primed to go get a guy like Arvell Reese, especially with them trading Jermaine Johnson, who was the edge rusher to the Tennessee Titans. But many are saying now, Sonny Styles can give you the same type of production and play as an edge rusher or an off-ball linebacker because of his size and his measurables and how well he moves. Just kind of think of the Micah Parsons-type role for Sonny Styles. He can be an off-ball guy, and he can be a guy that can be a blitz interior, or you can move him on the edge, and he can bring pressure that way.
Yeah, man, it's going to be interesting. Those numbers he put up were very impressive. Caleb Downs played high school ball here in the ATL, guys. Was one of the best players to come out of the state. And he is going to be a top five selection. I'm with you, B, on that. Man, we got so much to wait and see as this field. B, we'll evaluation on what you thought about some of the performances we'll see and then how that affects the draft moving forward. Appreciate you as always, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Bryant McFadden from CBS Sports. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. We're live at Twin Peaks. Abe's in for Mike. We're coming back. Daily Downloads on the way. Hawks beat the Wizards last night, but everybody around the country is City Monday. We got to get into this. Steve Kuhn is going to stop by, Hawks CEO as well, a little bit later on in the show. Stay there. We'll tell you who just went deep, not once, but twice. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abe just told me he has takes and he hasn't been able to deliver any of them. So I'm like, okay, we need to get into this. We're live at Twin Peaks. Before we get into your takes, sir,
yeah.
You are doing something, and we're going to talk more about this in Guy Talk coming up a little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour. Look, I have one goal today, okay? One goal and one goal only.
Don't set it too lofty.
One goal and one goal only.
Okay.
Just want you to have a cocktail with me.
That's a bad idea.
I just want you to have one cocktail. And the reason is this. This is why. Abe has been training for how long now?
Like months. Like 5 months.
How long?
Like four or 5 months.
For a...
But like hardcore training for like 2.5 months.
Okay. For a marathon on...
Sunday. Right here in Atlanta.
You know what? A drink will relax you, man.
I don't think so.
I mean, it's time to go ahead and let loose, man. You've done all the hard work. I came in today. I said, "Abe, man, let's have a toast. Let's have a toast to what you're going to achieve on Sunday." And you literally said to me, "I haven't drank in months. I'm not going to have a drink." So that's my goal today. Before we get out of here at 6, you're going to sip something, okay? Trust me on this.
Look, I don't know how quick your hands are. You want to do like a switcheroo type situation? You're not going to hand it to me willingly.
No, she's going to hand it to you willingly.
It's going to sit on the table and become room temperature.
Come on. You told me that. I was like, no, bro.
Give me 48 hours.
That's not how you celebrate your hard training. You
don't celebrate beforehand?
Of course you do. You go into the race, you celebrate. You get after the race, you celebrate your accomplishments.
Celebrate.
Are you gonna break any times this weekend? No. Okay, so there you have it. We need to have a drink.
I'm not going to set the 2-hour world record. No.
All right, more on this coming up. That's something that's bothering me because Abe's like, I'm not drinking. I'm not going to have anything.
48 hours.
Exactly.
I've been good for 2.5 months. What's another 2 days?
Your body's it's a fine-tuned machine. I mean, come on. What's one cocktail going to do?
I have some thoughts about fine-tuned machine and cocktails and how those go together.
All right, man, let's talk about what happened last night with the Hawks. They beat the Wizards 126-96. Third straight win. Can we run off 5, 6, 7, 8 in a row? Can we?
8's a bit much. Let's be a little realistic here. But can you go 6-2? You know, this is still, realistic
what?
Here.
It's what are you talking about? It's still what?
This is a team. Look,
they got to get everybody back healthy. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine. They'll be good. 8 in a row is a lot. That's all.
Okay.
This is a game last night, Carl, that this team didn't previously win for a couple of different reasons. I've seen way too many affairs where this team looks one way one night, turns around, not always against the same team, and then two nights later...
looks like crap.
Yeah. And you sat there before tip-off last night and said, all right, I saw how you closed the game. What was it, a 24-2 run or whatever it was to pull away on Tuesday night? Can you look like that against a team that you know doesn't want to win, you know isn't better than you or more talented than you, and is on the road? You've each got the same amount of rest. There's no excuses going with that. And this is a game that previously, who knows what would have happened. You add that in with Jalen Johnson being ruled out, Nikhil Alexander-Walker being ruled out, and separate of Washington, this is, with those two guys gone, this is never a game you win.
Right.
All season long, this has not been a game that you win. I don't care who the opponent has been. And so when you kind of combine both of those, right, you got two of your best players out, two of your starters, with the fact that you just beat this team, you just closed the game on a pretty strong note, how are you going to come out? And you came out ready, you came out strong, and you came out with a couple of guys who used to be on that team getting a little get back in Kispert and McCollum. And Kispert had one of the real hot shooting nights we've ever seen in Atlanta, made his first 5 threes, including a couple.
Ridiculous.
I don't know if you saw the one.
It's ridiculous.
It was nearly a turnover. It kind of just in the far corner.
Yeah.
Ball just kind of got like flipped to him, and he had no time on the shot clock and just threw it up.
That's when you know it's your night, right?
Just nets.
That's when you know it's your night.
Yeah.
He got a great start. McCollum has shown, and we knew this, right? I mean, like, if you didn't watch McCollum in his early days, again, with Dame in Portland, they were unbelievable.
He's a getter, yeah.
And he's a bucket getter. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. He can score. I don't ever think that's been debated. Fighting through the injuries over the years, gotten a little bit older, but he puts up 25 points. Look, nobody's ever going to debate CJ McCollum can score. Kuminga last night, 17-9. Again, don't need to see him score 35 every night. He didn't have to last night, right? He had plenty of help, to your point, Abe, but he's active, and that's the thing we want to see. Like, he's on the floor. He's active. He looks like he's engaged. That's what I want to see. Trailblazers on Sunday at 6 o'clock, and this is what I'm saying. This should be another dub. Trailblazers are terrible. Go ahead and take advantage of the schedule while it's in front of you. And, look, I'm not going to put – 6 or 7 or 8 in a row out of question just because of the competition. Milwaukee's beat up. You know, you start looking ahead until we get into that mix where you've got contenders coming in. And that would be obviously Detroit on the schedule. I think you got the Knicks later on in a few weeks. But bottom line is, Hawks look good, man, and they continue to win. Meanwhile, Spencer Strider's taking the mound on Saturday for the Braves. But you just told me a couple of Braves went deep today at spring training.
Well, Mike Yastrzemski hit two of them. But, that was earlier in the game. Ronald Acuna had a grand slam.
Acuna for life!
Had stolen a couple bases earlier, second and third on there. And then Matt Olson hit a deep one after Acuna's grand slam. So they're up 14-4. The offense is cooking. But
can we save some of this?
Well,
14
I'm
runs?
Bad,
no, I'm joking. But I'm like, this is what happens. The season will start, and the Braves will score 5 runs in the first 2 weeks of the season. 14, though. It's spring training.
Yep.
Bottom line is, guys look like they're in rhythm. When you tell me that about Acuna, and Mike and I have been debating this. Mike's out today. Abe's in. We're live at Twin Peaks, guys, in Buckhead. I think they're going to let Acuna loose. I think he's going to steal
the running?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they're going to let him loose. I think Walt Weiss is going to say, feel it. If you feel like you can go, go. Does he steal 70 bases? No, Abe. I don't need him to do that again. But I do think he gets on the base paths. He's feeling 100%. Why not? We can't – this idea like, well, we don't want to get him to get hurt. If he's back and he's 100%, let him affect the game the way he affects the game.
He's also building towards a new contract.
Okay.
And that's going to be part of a number that you present if you're Acuna's agent and you're making a PowerPoint. He's not going to sit here and steal 10.
No.
He's going to be like, and I also led the team in steals. I also led the National League in steals. They're going to run him. He's going to want to run, knowing that money's going to be presented at some point, and that's going to be part of the factor.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. By the way, Acuna, Albies, Profar playing for their their last spring training game actually before heading to the World Baseball Classic. You interested in the WBC?
Bro, I was watching indoor track yesterday.
Okay, I forgot who I was talking to.
So, what do you think?
Never mind.
Like, come on.
I forgot.
But yes.
I forgot who I was talking to.
And I was talking with Bo Johnson the other day. Is there any part of this WBC that can carry over some of the patriotism from, like, Olympic hockey? Like are people going to start to watch Team USA in the same manner? Because the last time USA went out there and won, it was thrilling. It was exciting. It's all your favorite players, some of the ones you don't like, I guess. If you're not a Bryce Harper fan, you have to root for him on Team USA. But I kind of wondered if you can garner a little bit of that feel. It's not going to be the same.
No, we know that.
But I wonder if there's a little bit of that.
I do know this. A lot of the Latin players take this very seriously because they're competing against guys that they grew up with, they know, they've either played against. There is this competitive thing that happens with the Latin American
countries.
We
see that year by year in the Caribbean World
absolutely.
Series, too.
So I'm not going to tell you, like, Acuna or Albies are going to go down there and not take it seriously with their teams. We should, too, and I think you're right. Like, if we start to get some traction, maybe it picks up a little momentum, but it won't be at an Olympic level just because of the stage. And, I bring this up. I don't know how many fans really know about the WBC. It's been around now for a while, but when you talk about, they're going to play in the World Baseball Classic, do most baseball fans even know? Do they care? I don't know.
I thought so. I assumed so. But now that you present it, maybe not.
You know what I mean? We know, but I'm saying, like, if we went right now on Peachtree, we're on Peachtree in Piedmont, walked outside and said, yo, you know about the World Baseball Classic? I guarantee you most people being like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's where our players – I mean, you start to explain it. I don't know if people are paying attention like that.
By the way, I looked at the game sites and locations. I did feel a little way about no games in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I don't know, Miami, who cares? Get them over here.
They've been selling out down there, though. That's what I'm talking about.
If we had a WBC game here, maybe we'd have a new pitcher.
But okay, that's what I'm talking about, though. They sell out down there. There's a big contingent that loves it. Hey, man, real quick, Zach Klein reports Oscar Delp. We're going to talk more about this in the 4 o'clock hour as we talk Dogs, Combine. I'm a little surprised.
Because I know what I'm thinking. I want to see if you're thinking the same thing.
I'm surprised that we didn't know about this.
All right, I want – go all the way there.
Okay, hold on.
Go all the way there.
Oscar Delp cannot go through combine drills due to liability issues. And basically, the situation, dog fans, is that he played the entire season with a hairline fracture in his foot. And then it was found accidentally after routine x-ray. So he's not allowed to participate in the drills.
It's a liability issue.
Yes. Yeah. He will be able to do his pro day and all of that. We didn't know anything about this during the season.
Did Georgia?
Don't know.
Here's where I get to asking questions, because I don't think it's did they hide
see, and
it.
I don't think
they even knew about it, and that has me asking equally as many questions about their medical situation and the attention to detail and all that. How do you not know? How do you not pick up on this? Maybe you just never x-rayed it. There was no issue. I guess that's where you're at. You never did an x-ray, and then so you didn't see it. It wasn't missing it. You just never... There's some questions, right?
Yeah, there is.
Like he had a fractured foot all year.
I thought, Abe, they underutilized him. I always thought, like, they should be using Oscar Delp more. We had Mike Griffith on the show yesterday.
Okay.
And I said, look, anybody following in the footsteps of Brock Bowers is going to be a tough task, right? Arguably the greatest tight end in college football history. And then he goes to the NFL, he's playing with bombs and puts up numbers. But I thought Delp would be more effective. And he said, look, they're two different players. But then you present this to your point, and you're going, did they know, and that's why they didn't maybe do all the things that they wanted to do with him, and they needed to maintain his health throughout the course of the season? I don't know. But either way, this news came out, and Delp's not going to participate in the drills at the combine, but he will participate in his pro day. Yeah, a hairline fracture in his foot. And by the way, I mean, it sounds serious, but he played all year, so – either way.
You know why? He probably had one cocktail before one of the games.
And let his hair down. That's what you need to do.
I'm trying to run a marathon on a fractured foot.
No, between now and 6, we're going to get you a cocktail. I guarantee you. What's that? Shirley Temple.
with the electrolytes, please.
Tinker's out here. Tinker will buy it for you. We're going to get you going. Hey, man, Diego Pavia, are you a fan? You think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback? Do you think he'll even be drafted? Is that a no?
I don't.
The audience can't see your face.
I was honestly, I was stunned that you said NFL quarterback.
He's at the combine, and he's not toning it down.
Cool.
He is still pounding his chest.
Good for him.
Basically telling everybody who he is, what he did, and how he is a guy that you should take. I'm a little surprised. Like, coming off the Heisman Trophy thing, didn't he lose a little bit of luster with the way he reacted to all of that, calling out people? Get to the combine. Here's a chance to impress, you know, the scouts and all the general managers, et cetera. And Diego Pavia, look, I love his enthusiasm, but I don't think he is Johnny Manziel. It's unfair because
he's
Johnny
worse.
No, he's not. Johnny Manziel is an alcoholic.
Yeah, as a player, he's not Johnny.
But he has the confidence of Johnny.
I get that.
And that's what I was going to make the comparison.
How'd that work out for him?
Well, look, they went 10-3. First 10 wins.
No. How'd that work out for Johnny? Johnny didn't fail in Cleveland just because of the alcohol and drugs.
Why did Johnny fail? Because
he wasn't
a
good enough player.
Well, he wasn't. But also when
you're – that's what Pavi is walking into.
No. But when you're focused on these other things, it takes away from your focus. And look, you know, the stories are endless with Johnny, and some are public, some are not. But when you leave practice and you go get hammered or you're hammered before practice starts – That doesn't bode well for you being a long-term franchise guy. I don't know if Diego Pavia – I don't want to put him in that category. That's what I'm saying. But I
love – He won't be in that category because he's not ever going to start an NFL game.
You don't feel that way?
No.
Okay.
If I'm a team and he
– Too small or just not skilled enough?
Definitely too small.
All right.
Close to not being skilled enough.
Okay.
And if this guy sits here and says, I will not consider a position change, then I will not consider putting you on my big board.
He's
going to have to change positions if he wants to have any real career.
Wait a
minute.
If he
wants to sit there and be QB3.
Positions? What position?
I don't care.
He's not playing anything else.
Now, he's not as fat.
He can't play DB. What do you see?
He's a special teamer.
Come on.
Poor man's Taysom Hill.
They measured him at 5'10", by the way.
Fullback.
And a lot of
he
people
wants that smoke
are saying that's an issue, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. He's not the first 5'10 quarterback in the league. What are you talking about? Now, Kyler Murray's way more talented than he was.
Kyler Murray's getting run.
He is getting run.
And he is way more talented.
He's
so
way more
So where does that
talented.
Leave this?
I don't know, man. If you don't remember, after the Heisman, he put out that message, F all the voters. And everybody's like, whoa, hold on. So that's what I was talking about. That was on social media. Mm-hmm. People said he should back off of that. Then he gets to the combine, and he's pounding his chest like, you know, he's the big man on campus.
I don't think he's ever a backup in the league.
Okay. That's a bold.
QB3 at worst.
That's a bold statement, but I kind of agree with you.
You want him here?
I'm sorry?
We got a pretty empty room.
What'd you say?
You want him here?
That would be a hard no.
We got a pretty empty room, man. We need arms.
No. If we're going after a quarterback, let's go after a real quarterback who can play. All right? Coming up, NFL Blitz is on the way, and more takes from Abe as we're live at Twin Peaks. I need a waitress over here. We got to get a cocktail or two.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, I sit down with people who don't just dream big, they build big. From Mark Cuban to Mel Robbins, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with me, Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast available now.